Welcome back to the Man Cave Caucus Podcast. We're hunkered down here in the man cave, just chilling like villains and ready to deliver the best in the news, commentary, entertainment, and probably a bizarre story or two, just for the fun of it. I'm your host, Ben Baker. Tim Holden is here across the makeshift desk on mic number two, and Detective Joel Mace, soon to be Representative Mace, if we have anything to do with it, is over there just at one with the pleather couch. And so that means we're ready to get it started.
Let's get it started.
Up in here. Tim, you just rolled in from where now?
Altus, Oklahoma, right there on the Texas-Oklahoma line.
That's a ways, son.
About 45 minutes past Fort Sill.
I got to go to Kilgore, Texas here pretty soon for a wedding. You know, Josh Burkholder's getting married.
Crazy.
Got to go up there on Black Friday.
Wow.
I should say down there.
I thought my cousin's wedding in Arizona on D-Day was kind of a
weird one.
Odd selection.
Yeah.
I'm not sure
who has weddings on Black Friday, but.
No, it was on D-Day, right? November 8th?
Yeah.
I think that's when they stormed the beaches of Normandy. Don't take my word for it.
I mean,
Joel don't have his laptop out.
That's a
bold
date. Bold date for a wedding.
Yeah.
Black Friday, though.
I'm going to take my liberties and say that it was definitely the day they stormed the beaches of Normandy. Probably in the year of our Lord, 1943.
If Tim is right, I don't even know what to say, Joel.
I said 42, he said 43, right?
Yeah. I'm going to say 44. Why not?
And I'm not Googling it. I'm ordering a pizza.
So, who's right, Joel?
Well,
it could have not even been on November 8th. That's the problem.
First up on the docket today.
We're way off. June 6th, 1944.
Oh!
Ah, been at the right year. What happened on November 8th? On the 8th of November. I know the Big and Rich sang about it. So, yeah. Something happened.
So, you know, the President Trump is suing the BBC. Did you see this? So, you know, they had a documentary that was called something along the lines of like coverage of Donald Trump's reelection campaign and also January 6th, U.S. Capitol so-called riot. But the episode aired on October 2024, just 1 week before the U.S. presidential election. Interesting timing, right? So, but in that documentary, the BBC edited excerpts from Trump's January 6th speech to Congress and also to supporters. But they spliced all these clips together and made it look like it was, you know, this false, basically created this false impression that he was directly inciting violence against the Capitol. You know, we know this. We've talked about this on many occasions. Well, you know, none of that was true the way that they portrayed it. And so on November the 10th, Trump's legal team sent a formal letter to the BBC accusing the broadcaster of defamation under Florida law, which I guess is where the suit would likely be filed. So the letter demanded a couple of things: a full retraction of the documentary, a public apology, and then financial compensation for, and I quote, overwhelming financial and reputational harm. So it set a deadline of November 14th at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, threatening to file a lawsuit seeking at least $1 billion in damages if those demands were unmet. And then later, Trump actually mentioned this in a public statement, telling reporters on Air Force One that he would sue for anywhere between $1 billion and $5 billion. And he said probably sometime next week. So the BBC acknowledged the editing error as an error of judgment, they called it, that unintentionally gave the mistaken impression of a direct call for violent action. That's exactly what they said. Unintentionally gave the mistaken impression of a direct call for violent action. On November 14th, they issued a public correction on their website and sent a personal apology to President Trump and committed to not rebroadcasting the documentary on any platform. However, they rejected the defamation claim, refused to pay the compensation, and argued that there was no basis for a lawsuit. So, of course, you know, there's a lot of pressure going toward the BBC right now, especially also including their false accusations of, not their false accusations, but their bias and their coverage of the Gaza war. So it led to actually the resignation of two top executives, Director General Tim Davey and News CEO Deborah Ternus. So at least the pressure toward the BBC is reorganizing some of their structure, if nothing else, for their ridiculous coverage of many things. But in this case, specifically January 6th and the presidential campaign for Donald Trump. So under Florida defamation law, Trump, as a public figure, I don't know if you guys know this, but defamation laws are like really strict when it comes to public figures. So if you're an elected official, it's almost impossible to get a defamation lawsuit and win it. Hmm. I've actually checked into this, believe it or not, back in the day.
You probably had some grounds to.
I did. I thought I did. Actually talked to a lawyer on a couple occasions regarding certain ridiculous bloggers in our area that published false information. I won't mention any names, but the lawyer's like, look, yes, if you were a regular citizen, absolutely, you'd win this defamation case.
Does it rhyme with handy burners?
But he said, as a public official, the threshold is much higher and you're not going to win. So we never pursued that. But in Florida, you have to prove actual malice, which I think is most places. It's probably the same in Missouri when it comes to defamation for a public figure. You have to prove actual malice. So like knowing falsehood or reckless disregard for the truth that you're purposely trying to, which I don't know. I said to the lawyer, I think it even meets that definition for what was published with my name on it. But he said, even then it's going to be almost impossible. So back to Trump's story, the BBC's apology and admission of error might help in his case because they've already like issued an apology saying we were wrong. So that's like an admission of guilt, right? So that would help, but because of the very strong First Amendment protections that shield media outlets, which, you know, we all believe in the First Amendment, but some of these media outlets are abusing it every single day. And then also, like, if they were to bring this up in the UK, they have a one-year statute of limitations for defamation that's already expired, so it wouldn't work there. So I'm sure he plans to file in the U.S., likely Florida. But here's the thing. Trump has a pretty good record of winning many of these lawsuits. So here's the list so far. CBS, you know, the 60-minute interview with Kamala Harris that was purposely edited to favor her, like shamelessly, right? Yeah. Like not even...
It goes both ways.
Not even trying to be objective. Back in 2024 in the presidential campaign, he won that one, $16 million. That was in July of 2025. ABC, you know, the anchor called Trump, I think the term was like liable for rape regarding the Jean Carroll, the ridiculous made-up yeah. Jean Carroll case, right?
He got a bunch of money off
$15 million dollars on that one he won as well. And then I think there was a YouTube settlement for moderation, content moderation during COVID and all that, where the government was conspiring under Joe Biden and all of that that was going on. And so a $24.5 million settlement with YouTube. And I think there was a Facebook settlement. Like, he's won all of these. So I don't know, you know, what happens with this, but I would say that my bets would probably be on the side of
this. Seemed like the
winning
one of the most egregious things I've seen out of the news media.
Yeah, with the January 6th stuff and 50, the BBC,
54 minutes.
Yeah,
just
in the meantime, President Trump's got a new rap video out. It may bring in more than the billion that he's asking for. I don't know. Here it goes.
This one's for all my Brits. Paying that license fee. What a scam, right? We're taking it back. Yo, I'm drunk on the track with the West Coast glow. Got the BBC shook, they don't want that smoke. Panorama cut my speech, fake news on repeat. Now I'm dropping true bombs, straight heat, no tweet. They edited the piece, left the fire in place. Now they're facing a lawsuit, $1 billion disgrace. They call it public service, I call it state control. You funding lefty lies with your tele remote, bro. BBC pay me $1 billion, okay. Gonna make the beat deal, hear them pray. Fake news down. In town, make the BBC pay. Uh-huh. Bloated buyers broken, that's their brand.
I'll just tell you, AI is out of control right
AI,
now.
Why did they not do it in his voice?
That was my next comment.
I know.
They could have.
I mean, they went to a lot of trouble. This is a full music video.
10 p.m. deadline, Friday night show. BBC sweating, cameras won't roll. BBC pay me $1 billion, okay. Gonna make the big meal here.
He's even got the earring. We drain swamps even in the UK.
Yo, they said I couldn't do it internationally. Now look,
if he wins this, he needs to take the billion and start the MAGA network.
Truth, and I'm coming for that check. Big billion ringing, BBC cringing, reform on deck. Start singing truth to the world, no matter what they say. President Trump, make the BBC pay. Hey, yeah, beautiful lawsuit, folks. They lied. We sued. They paid.
He's driving.
It's gonna be tremendous.
That car is sweet.
He was driving from the passenger seat.
AI's not completely perfected yet, right?
Well, it kind of looked like he took the wheel from BBC, who was in the driver's seat. It's impressive what I don't know if it's scary or impressive what AI
is.
I know,
right?
But that was a full music video.
Yeah.
There's got to be an app out there that'll write the song, do an entire music video. Production cost of that, for whoever made it, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of electricity used, but I mean,
probably zero,
probably the cheapest rap video ever made. rap music video.
But they didn't use his voice.
That bothered me. Because it would have been
easy.
Because
they did everything but.
Prompt that in.
Hey. We need to pair Sean Farage up with them and
I know
make it happen.
But I mean, they just had to prompt
I know.
It. They just said in Trump's voice.
They've got enough
it was over.
Tracks of Trump's voice.
Yeah.
Hey, before we move on, November 8th, 1965 was the 173rd Airborne Brigade. Airborne Brigade was ambushed during Operation Hump in Vietnam, and that's what Big and Rich sang about. FYI.
Well, shows you what I know.
It was a great song.
I mean, it did stick in your head, Tim.
That's what learning is all about.
Yeah. That's right. And that's what you'll find out here at the Man Cave Caucus. You're going to learn information. If nothing else, you will learn some information. It might be random.
Might be wrong.
Totally useless.
Bizarre, totally useless and wrong information, but you will learn it.
If you remember the lyrics to contemporary Christian songs of the 90s.
Yeah.
Our useless facts are not going to hurt your brain.
That's right. That's right.
Huh. If you have a VeggieTales song that gets stuck in your head every now and again, you're going to be okay.
If you know who Larry the Cucumber is.
Where is your hairbrush is what I want to know.
The yodeling veterinarian of the Alps gets me sometimes. I'll be having a nice, peaceful day, and then that's the soundtrack of the day for 12 hours straight. Imagine.
I know. I tell you what gets stuck in my head is that Menards jingle.
I've rewritten it.
Dude.
I bet you have.
I sing it.
Every time I go, I asked the guy the other day, I said, does this end up just driving you? He said, I don't even hear it now. And I said, dude, I'm not there yet because it gets stuck in my head.
It's super catchy. Randomly, driving down the road,
yep.
I'll start singing my jingle to the Menards music.
So next up, the longest government shutdown in history is finally over. It lasted 43 days, ending on November the 12th, when President Trump signed a bipartisan funding bill into law. I had to go back to work Thursday. Dadgummit. Because the shutdown ended on Wednesday. So this surpasses the previous record of
40 days,
35 days during the 2018-2019 shutdown. But here's J.D. Vance talking about the Democrats and some of their party issues. I'm telling you, they're a mess right now. Even more so than they already are, just inherently, they're a mess. Listen to this.
Did you have conversations
with
them?
Sean Hannity.
Say, work this out with me. Did that happen behind the scenes that nobody knows about?
Oh, of course. Privately, we were having conversations all the time. And frankly, privately, the Democrats would recognize the position of their far left was crazy. But they all feel a little bit like they're being held hostage by their far left. You said it very well. Chuck Schumer, this probably ended his career. And he was the person who was fighting more than anybody to keep the government shut down. So the far left, they're never going to be satisfied unless the Democrats are willing to burn down the entire country. Luckily, there were a few moderate Democrats who allowed reason to prevail. We have to step back, Sean, and remember how crazy the demands were. They wanted $1.5 trillion, a lot of that healthcare benefits for illegal aliens. They wanted us to undo all of the great border policy that we've been doing. They wanted us to refund, like you said, NPR and PBS. They were basically saying that we want the far left's priorities to dominate in the Trump administration, and unless that happens, we're going to set the entire country on fire. A really disgraceful moment for the far left of the Democrats, and frankly, a very revealing moment for the American people, because what were they asking, Sean? They weren't saying that we want to do great things for the American people. They weren't talking about jobs. They weren't talking about health care. They were talking about give us $1.5 trillion for healthcare benefits for illegal aliens.
So, like, what he's saying is, like, most of your run-of-the-mill Democrats were wanting it to be reopened, right? Because they were probably facing a lot of pressure in their districts, even Chucky. but they caved to the extreme wing of the party, which is what is happening kind of across the board, even in like red states like Missouri. The Democrat Party is basically controlled by the extreme wing.
So what did we acquiesce to for the reopening?
They didn't give in to really any of those demands. Even in the final vote, though, in the Senate, there was a controversy. Rand Paul was kind of holding up the bill, supposedly, because of the last-minute measures that were thrown in the bill to ban hemp. I don't know if you heard about this.
Mm-hmm.
So this is something that's interesting to me because a similar bill has been trying to get through the Missouri legislature in the last few years. I had a bill to protect minors against this stuff, you know, like selling it to minors would be a crime. Several other measures that were in the bill to do that, but
as far as Delta products, yeah, like Delta 8,
but not completely shut down the hemp industry, right? Like kind of the balance there.
There should have always been a delineation between hemp and, like, you can use it for certain things. Just
yes. Well, so what happened is, and here's a little history on that. Like the weed lobby, I call it, they want it banned because it's competition.
Yeah.
For them, they want it completely banned, and I hate this kind of stuff. Just, like, I've never been in favor of legalizing recreational use of marijuana, you know, all of that. But what I hate worse than that is how that government can set up monopolies because whoever, you know, the lobby is that is the strongest. And in this case, it was the marijuana lobby. But here's what happened too. Like many of the hemp producers are hemp producers because they had to retool. Like they applied for marijuana licenses. Like this is the state of Missouri I'm yeah. telling you about. They applied for licenses, didn't get any. They had already like built infrastructure and everything to do this and then didn't get any licenses.
And that
and
was
some people that had no infrastructure got licenses.
Because of the lobby.
Because of the monopoly and the shady way that it was all set up. So some of those people, like, what do you do then? You've invested $2 million into a business plan and you didn't get a license. So they retooled, started using it for hemp products, right? And turn their farms into growing hemp. Now they're going to be shut down, it looks like, because this did get passed. So, and this all goes back to the farm bill a couple of years ago where they allowed kind of some unclear definitions that opened this up in the first place. So here's the thing. The bottom line is this. Government caused this problem. And then the free market adjusted to the government causing the problem and what they did, found a way to keep their businesses open. And now the government claims to fix the problem. And what it will actually do is put people out of business that were legally operating according to the law. And that's the kind of stuff I detest it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is Mitch McConnell cashing a check on his way out, right?
I think Mitch was definitely involved.
It was his exemption. Like yep. it was his
Yeah, but it was the weed lobby that was yeah. really behind it.
And I really
you can guarantee it.
I really hate this because that what you're talking about, what it's good for the farm bill and what's good for the American farmer and the Missouri farmer is that hemp can be used to feed cattle.
Yeah.
It can
and
be
a lot of other things.
A billion things.
Yeah.
And they have to, by law, stay under a certain percentage of THC.
Yeah.
No one's getting high off of hemp.
Right.
They're using it to benefit society. It's not a drug. It's a byproduct.
Now they did make some exceptions. I haven't read the total bill yet to see exactly what the exceptions were. But I do know that Rand Paul was basically making the argument that I made when it came to what the weed lobby was trying to get done in Missouri. It's basically the same thing. And so they were blasting Rand Paul for this. And, you know, like, you know, I know, like, he sometimes is a pain, but he, I think he was right about this. And because, you know, he was like, look, why are we putting these people out of business unnecessarily? And why was this thrown into this bill to reopen the government? Like, do this as a standalone bill.
Yeah.
Right. But that's unfortunately what happens a lot of times in politics. Mm. So, and here's the thing with it, like, with this issue, like, you can have a problem with the products and at the same time disagree with the way that the government meddles in the free market.
I agree. I think that, and it's pointless because it's done, but it would have been to classify hemp that was being used for human consumption, just give them the same oversight and rules as the marijuana industry has, and then let hemp go on for all other. It just goes back to the history of it where...
I just thought it was interesting that they basically banned hemp before they federally, before they ever legalized marijuana federally.
Well, did you know that the guy that was...
Which, you know, that is what is coming then.
The guy that killed marijuana the first time was because he wanted hemp shut down. He owned all the cotton
processing. Initially, yeah.
Initially, back in the Reefer Madness. Years ago. It wasn't that long. I think it was in the 60s.
Was it? I'll Google it. Don't worry. Carry on.
I've been wrong tonight on dates. I was off by 40 years just a bit ago.
Joel will find it.
So anyway, don't get me started on this issue because there's a lot that goes into it that I've experienced personally in the Missouri legislature. But... back to the shutdown. Like, so most of the government is funded through January when they will have to do another continuing resolution to fund the federal government again in January. But so far, it looks like agriculture is funded through the rest of the fiscal year. So I'm really happy about that because my agency then doesn't have to worry about another shutdown in January. So there's that.
Just to point out, Tim, when did you say it was, the 60s?
Well, that's when Reefer Madness was made. I thought it all happened around the same time, but the same driving force in politics.
That actually happened as a byproduct of the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937.
Marijuana.
Who was the one pushing? Who had the money to gain from cotton?
I will Google
Cotton Eye Joe.
I will Google that too. I did see the documentary you're talking about. I know what you saw. I'll have to Google that.
Well, then why were you acting like I was crazy?
No. I did the time Joel. Frame, which you were closer than me.
Mark it down, Joel.
I'm good with dates. What
Tim
can I
was
say?
Closer than you.
Just really he was.
Enjoy and relish it.
I'm a steel trap for dates
because it's not very often.
I'm going to soak up in it.
All right. Next up, the Olympics are set to ban any biological males from competing in women's events in the Olympics. Because why, you ask? Well, they did a study, Tim, and an investigation, and it has found significant evidence that someone born male may have physical advantages.
No.
Can you believe it? We definitely needed a study to find this information, didn't we?
I'm surprised they didn't come up with non-conclusive further studies needed.
Right. I mean, who would have believed it otherwise? I'm so glad that really smart people somewhere figured that out for us. And let us all know that that is the case, that biological males may have a physical advantage when it comes to sport. Thank you. Thank you, Captain Obvious, for that information. By the way, did you see the hearing where Pete Hegseth is being questioned by the trans-identifying congressman?
I did not.
This is...
Who's the trans-identifying congressman?
Well,
is that
he goes by...
Macy, or Nancy Mace was...
Jacobs is his last name that he has taken. I don't know if that's his actual last name.
Is that who Nancy Mace was going round and round with?
Yeah.
Sarah McBride.
Sarah. Yeah. So this, though, is somebody else. Because this person's name is Jacobs.
Go figure, there are two.
Are there more than one in Congress now?
I'll find out.
I'm telling you what.
They're multiplying. So.
Not the natural way.
Yeah, definitely not that way.
Sarah Jacobs.
Yeah. Is that the same one?
I don't know. I'll find out.
That's interesting.
Two Sarahs?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have they been seen at the same time?
That's Sarah.
The same place.
Like Superman.
The name's Jacobs. Sarah Jacobs.
This is so funny. I'm going to play this and then we'll talk about it. Listen to this interchange between Pete Hegseth and Sarah Jacobs, who is obviously out of her league.
Because if it were, you would be keeping these women in. Instead, you are the one injecting culture wars into the military, and it's at the detriment of our military readiness and national security. Now, General Kane, I'd like to turn to you.
So to be clear, these are men who think they're women.
These are women. I'm happy to educate you on trans issues at another
time.
We've
identified is that there's mental health issues belief system.
I'd like to turn to General
Kane. Are detrimental to readiness. And that's the determination that we've made and that we stand behind. Gender dysphoria.
And so you don't.
So Sarah Jacobs is not the trans person.
It's not?
Yeah.
Is it? Sarah Jacobs looks like one of those people that, I mean, if she is, it looks like one of those people that Afro Man sang about.
Got it. Adam's apple the size of a hedge
okay,
apple.
Okay, so we got to figure this out, Joel.
I'm on it.
So who is Miss Jacobs or Mr.? And where do they represent? And are they a trans-identifying? Because she said or he
no.
said...
They're U.S. not. Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs is not trans. She's an outspoken ally of the LGBTQ plus minus divided by sign community.
Plus minus.
Who has a trans brother.
Okay.
And a gender nonconforming sibling.
Mm-hmm.
Differentiate those two for me. She has been a vocal advocate of trans rights, serving as the vice chair of the Congressional Equality Caucus and co-chair of the Congressional Transgender Equality Task Force. That's a mouthful.
Statistically speaking, it's impossible to have two gender non-conforming children
in the same family
and a third who defends them. That's a devouring mother.
Thank you, JP.
Devouring mother.
Jordan Peterson live in the Man Cave Caucus.
In the flesh.
I've been the whole way home. I listened to We Who Wrestle With God.
So I thought this was the other Sarah then, McBride.
Sarah Palin?
No.
Too many Sarahs out there.
Sarah Palin looks 1,000% better than this congresswoman, but just my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Definitely not Sarah McBride.
Yeah. But she's trying to blame Hegseth for injecting culture wars into the military. Like, can you imagine the audacity and the irony of that? Like, they're the ones injecting their ideology into every possible nook and cranny of society these days, including the military.
I was going to say they're injecting culture wars into the bathrooms.
Yeah. With your kids. Like, and here's what the thing is, like, they don't even care what the actual result might be. Like, as long as they get the attention, it doesn't matter if, you know, it might be detrimental to national security, like in this case with the military. Like, it's obvious that Hegseth is exactly right. There is a problem here. There is mental issues that are connected to this, and it can cause people to not be ready to be able to serve in that capacity. That's a, I think, a fact.
But when your little bros call, You got to go.
Yeah.
You got to posture a little.
Right.
Your little bros.
Your little bros. Did you see where the trans influencer was attacked and beaten by the Palestinians? Like in.
Like they'd done.
Brussels or somewhere?
Like they'd done her hundreds of years.
Yeah. Did you see this? Mm-mm. And she just couldn't figure out, or he just couldn't figure out why, you know, because he's like, I've supported the Palestinians in their cause. Why is this happening? So I've got the video of this person.
We were confused why you were supporting the Palestinians.
Talking about it. But this is the kind of madness. Listen to this.
On est trans. On s'est agressé tout le temps. Et on peut rien dire. Bonsoir tout le monde, je me suis fait agresser physiquement. J'avais fait une vidéo au moment venu, mais le problème c'est que la vidéo n'a pas été enregistrée sur mon téléphone.
Yeah. Is he speaking French?
I'm flouncy Frenchman.
On était dans un bar. Je suis lucide,
so you can't understand what he's saying, but his face is all beaten up and everything. And he says, I've always supported Palestine. I don't understand why they'd attack me. Like when are these people going to figure out that they will never go along with the LGBTQ+ IA and all the things in the alphabet crazy group?
They think Republicans, conservative Republicans, are problematic. Go talk to some Shiites.
Yeah, you know, again, like the shock that
the Shiites went to see the Shiites.
Right. I don't know. I don't know when they're going to figure it out. But next up, so Trump hosted Syria's interim president, Ahmed al-Sharaa, at the White House. This is November the 10th. And this is hilarious because he takes some Trump cologne and sprays on this guy. It's his Victory 47 cologne.
I need some of that.
I didn't know that existed.
We've got to get some.
I'm in between colognes right now.
Yes. So just watch this video. This is hilarious. And then we'll talk about this.
This is men's. Men's fragrance. Yeah.
That's good.
It's the best fragrance. Come here, thanks.
I have more here, sir.
I have more.
So what we'll do is just take that, Joe, put it in, and then the other one is for your wife. How many wants?
One.
You guys said never know.
He said, how many wives? One? He said, with you guys, I never know.
Where's this guy from?
Syria.
Syria.
All of them were in Syria.
That was maybe the one. Very good.
They're speaking. Like, Trump is acting like he's understanding what they're saying.
He's probably got an earpiece in.
Okay.
On the other ear.
He said, are you serious?
So. This guy, al-Sharaa, he actually changed his name. His former name was Abu Muhammad al-Jilani. And he was a leader at an al-Qaeda-linked group. And he rose to power after his forces were ousted, after they ousted Bashar al-Assad. In December of 2024. So this guy, like, I don't trust this guy, by the way. He kind of like rebranded himself.
At least he didn't change it to Ali Sharia.
Right. It's real close, but not quite. But he used to be with Al-Qaeda and obvious like jihadist roots, but I think what Trump is doing here is like the mode of keep your friends close and your enemies closer. You know what I mean? I don't know. But I just thought that was funny. Like the cologne, he's just spraying it on it.
He definitely
sprayed it on like five people. He's
like, he said, "This like this guy's not going to sneak up on me."
He said, "It's the best fragrance." It probably had a tracker.
That's
in
what
it
I was going to say. Like it was some of those nanobots,
or just like straight up poison. Can you imagine?
Guy's going to have diarrhea till Easter's.
Oh man! Next up, China.
China
secretly bought a trailer park in Missouri that shares a property line and fence, actually, where the B-2 bombers fly out of Whiteman Air Force Base.
Oh, that's totally innocent.
Listen to this.
The Daily Caller reports a U.S. nuclear bomber fleet shares a fence with a trailer park linked to Chinese intelligence. Here it is. So it's one thing for a Chinese couple to buy a trailer park. Here it is. This is thanks to Google Image. It is another thing for them to go to great lengths to hide who they are, including using multiple shell companies to conceal their identities. Why is this all important? Because they bought a trailer park in the middle of Missouri, no disrespect to Missouri. It's at the foot of the runway where America's largest fleet of B-2 bombers take off. So you can.
So this is a true story.
The Mongol home park.
The Daily Caller reports about this. This actually happened in 2017 is when they purchased this. Sunset Village Trailer Park in Knob Noster, Missouri. You know where Knob Noster is, mm-hmm. Tim? By these entities linked to Chinese nationals via shell companies. Whiteman Air Force Base is the primary hub for B-2 stealth bombers. So, you know, this is what's interesting. So I think Congressman Alford talked about a little bit later on in this video, the oversight failures under really both administrations, but noting Missouri's 2024 executive order, because there was an executive order by the governor in 2024 that banned adversarial nations from owning land within 10 miles of military bases. So, you know, technically by the law currently, it shouldn't have been allowed.
They probably would have never been caught if they hadn't have named it Golden Dragon Wheel Estate.
Yeah. So I had the bill in the legislature in Missouri to completely ban foreign adversaries buying land in Missouri at all, anywhere, not just 10 miles within a base. To me, that's just ridiculous. 10 miles is nothing, you know, when it comes to national security. But of course, that bill couldn't get through the Republican supermajority in Missouri in the legislature because it wasn't a priority, you know, to the leadership. So they're always behind, it seems.
Yeah.
Always behind on what actually really matters.
And I don't know, real estate investing is not your go-to if you're a foreign.
Yeah.
What would this EO have done? Would it to an already established?
I don't think it was retroactive.
So it wouldn't have affected this.
Yeah.
But was your bill retroactive?
Mine originally, you had to, if a foreign adversary owned land, they would have to divest, you know. So
what classifies adversary?
Well, there's actually there's an official list of adversarial nations that the U.S. has. Well,
we keep a running list.
What would that have done to, like, I know Smithfield Meats is owned by China.
Yeah.
Would that have made Smithfield, China have to divest Smithfield?
Yeah. Or, like, go through an American, you know, they could set up a, what's it called? They could set up an agreement, a contract with an American landowner.
A highly scrutinized agreement.
Because that kind of offers as a buffer, right?
Well, something needs to happen there because
it does. It does need to happen. It's overdue.
It's ridiculous that Chinese nationals are owning land next to
our
one of our country's most prized Air Force bases.
And there's several other states that have done this already. Texas has done this. Florida has done this. And they're always ahead of us. And I hate that. Why is that? You know? Why is it?
Let's leave the
pack. I don't like it. I don't like it at all.
Reminds me of that.
Yeah.
If only Missouri had a fighter in there, like Joel Mace.
Yeah.
Mace for...
We're done being little brother.
Mace for 168.
159. We're done being little brother.
Tim said the 168.
Who is the 168?
There's not a 168, right? I think it stops it.
It stops at 163.
159th.
I may run for the 168th.
Make it up.
When you
redistrict?
When I redistrict my land, get out of those taxes.
That's right.
I'm going to do that Amish thing.
Mm-hmm.
Exemption. Reminds me of that Chinese cookbook. All this China talk.
Yeah.
101 ways to walk your dog.
Nice. I like that.
Perfect time for a break. We're going to be right back, everybody. Just hang in there. And by the way, we got a little complaint about this music last week for the break, but you know what that means, don't you?
Double down.
Got to give them what they want. This is the OG break music.
That's the original.
Yeah.
The original gangster.
Blues Odyssey.
Hi, this is Smooth Steve. Welcome to Jabba the Hutt.
I know a little about it.
And I'll guess the rest. That's how I got to the bottom of the Epstein situation.
Well,
I knew a little and I guessed the rest.
We're back from the break. And since you brought it up, Tim, we have to talk about the Epstein files and what has been released this week. So, one thing I want to mention before we get to that is, so Congressman Tim Burkett made a motion, did you see this, to bring the Epstein files forward and like brought this to a vote. And the Democrats blocked the motion to do that. You know, they're always going on, pontificating.
Is he the heir to the Kingsford fortune?
Tim Burkett? I don't know.
Charcoal briquette.
I think it's Burkett.
Oh.
Yeah, it's Burkett. Tim Burkett.
Sounded like you were talking about Kingsford Nuggets.
So, yeah, they blocked it. And here's what he had to say about that because, you know, again, they've been going on and on about the Epstein files, saying that Trump is in it and all this stuff. But, turns out it's really backfiring on him, but let's hear what Tim Burkett had to say.
Hey everybody, Tim Burchett just left the House
Burchett.
Of Lords, and I tried to do a UC unanimous consent.
I know who he
of
is.
I tried to get the Epstein files, get it straight to the floor, just to cut out all this nonsense, and you know, and the Democrats blocked it, oddly enough. Now here they've had it for 4 years, and they obviously if there's something there about Trump, they would have released it. And now they're all, let's get it out. Well, I just made a motion to bring it straight to the dadgum floor, and they blocked it. They blocked it. So this is politics. It has nothing to do with that, what's doing or doing what's right. I mean, it's Washington, D.C. to a T. And again, they ought to be ashamed of themselves, but they're probably not. Thank y'all for sending me here.
His face does not match the voice.
Right. So there, that happened. Well, then, so a lot of developments this week in the oversight committee. Okay?
What was the deal with the emails?
That's what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So, which our very own Congressman Eric Burleson is a member of the oversight committee, and I'm sure working hard, getting down to the needy greedy.
The needy greedy
of this mess. But the oversight committee released over 20,000 pages of documents this week. 20,000 pages of documents, mostly emails from Jeffrey Epstein's estate. Emails, texts, financial records, court files, spanning the years, I think, 2008 to 2019. So these disclosures that they have released obtained, they were obtained via subpoenas starting in September, but a lot of discussion about this, a lot of scrutiny of Epstein's ties to powerful figures, particularly in politics and in media. The release has reignited a lot of this discussion and debate once again over transparency, with Democrats, of course, accusing the Trump White House of a cover-up. But in my opinion, it's mainly to try to distract people from the shutdown, which was a disaster for Democrats from the beginning to the end, a disaster for them. So they're trying to find something to take people's attention off of that. So this is, I think it's why they started bringing this up again. So then the oversight committee releases all of this. So just to be clear, no new criminal charges have emerged from this, but the files highlight a lot of stuff, like Epstein's strategies, his manipulation of high-profile people, powerful people, and his access to those people as well, the elites. So here's a breakdown of the most significant revelations from these documents, the 20,000 pages that were released. Number one that I could find, okay, and I'm going to show you this, Tim. Jeffrey Epstein cannot spell. He cannot use punctuation or even proper capitalization, let alone good grammar.
It's the only thing we have in common.
That was my takeaway. That was my main takeaway from these emails. I want you to look at these. This is just one page. This is regarding some of the Steve Bannon emails, which was a totally new revelation from all this, but doesn't surprise me. But if you'll look at this, like his sentences, okay? Look at this. Just run on sentences, no capitalization, no punctuation. Like, it just drives me crazy. You can't even hardly read it.
Genius.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, financial genius.
Okay.
He's definitely not a Ponzi.
Definitely not.
What do they call him? Not a Ponzi, a Patsy.
A Patsy. Well, I don't know. Like, here's another one. Look at this one. I want you to see this. It's a run-on list of names of people.
Yeah, this looks like one of my Facebook posts.
And it's not a single capitalized name.
I see Schumer.
In this list. Yeah, Schumer's in there. John Kerry's in there, but spelled K-E-R-Y.
Yeah.
Gold and Sachs, but gold is G-O-U-L-D.
Gould.
What is Gould. What is Popple Queen?
I don't know. Some of this stuff makes zero sense to me, but
Barack,
yeah, we don't know.
Clinton, Pastrana,
I don't know. Rockefeller. There's a whole list. So that was the main takeaway for me. Like, the guy can't spell or write, apparently. But next to that, probably the most revealing was some of these emails from Steve Bannon, between Steve Bannon and Epstein. Okay. And it appears as though Bannon kind of served as a media strategist for Epstein. Okay. So hundreds of texts between 2018 and 2019 between Epstein and Steve Bannon. You know, and again, Steve Bannon's been a Trump ally since the beginning, like one of the OGs, the War Room podcast host as well now, but, even spent time in prison, for some of that. So, but it reveals that Bannon
would Mandelson be Nelson Mandela?
I don't know. Are you still looking at the list?
Top of the list.
Chomsky.
Mandelson.
Mandelbrot. I don't know. There's a lot of names. So it what a lot of this reveals is that Bannon was advising on reputation rehab for Epstein. And, you know, because he was in the middle of really being scrutinized. So Bannon called media coverage a sophisticated op in some of these emails. He helped craft adversarial responses to outlets, news media outlets, the justice system, and victims. Topics that they discussed included the Middle East and deals in the Middle East, documentary ideas, competing with Netflix, disparaging Trump as the worst negotiator in human history that is mentioned in these emails, which I think is hilarious because, in my opinion, like, Trump is by far the best negotiator president that we've had in history.
Not just president. I feel like...
Yeah, just in general.
I mean, he wrote a book about it.
But, yeah. But Epstein offered Bannon introduction to foreign leaders. And so... You know, there was a lot of exchange going on between Steve Bannon and Jeffrey Epstein. Another thing that stuck out in these documents and emails that were released is Epstein was real-time coaching Democratic Congresswoman Stacey Plaskett from a Democrat.
I thought you were going to say Abrams.
No. Stacey Plaskett, a Democrat from the Virgin Islands. There was a February 27, 2019 House hearing, and this was specifically Michael Cohen's testimony against Trump. Do you remember that? When Michael Cohen testified against Trump? So Epstein was feeding this Democrat congresswoman information on Trump's inner circle as Cohen was testifying against Trump. Okay. Mm. So one of the things that she mentions that Epstein feeds her, because they coincide, like the timestamps on his texts and what is released in this, and then the hearing testimony, it all coincides, and somebody put all that together. But Rona Graff was Trump's assistant, and Epstein was feeding her these details, saying that she was the keeper of the secrets and all this stuff. And it was brought up in that hearing, and immediately was using it to question Cohen. So it's interesting because obviously Epstein was trying to take Trump down. Right. So if you back up and talk about like what we did several episodes ago of Trump being an informant against Epstein, I don't know whether he had started finding this out or was privy to that information or what, but it seems like there was a major, opposition that was happening between the two. But there's also several New York Times figures that were tipping Epstein off. Finance Reporter, James Stewart in 2018. Wolf, a guy named Wolf with the New York Times, advised drip feeding information to the media for leverage against Trump. They protected Epstein's network, including Democrats, while he plotted against all the scrutiny that he was facing. Another thing was Epstein brokered a 2016 link between Peter Thiel, which is a big Trump donor, and Thomas Barak, which was the inaugural chair. I think he's now an ambassador. You can look that up, Joel, but seems like he's an ambassador somewhere now. I can't remember where it is. That was helping during Trump's transition. So there's other stuff in there. I mean, a whole list of stuff in these documents. Prince Andrew, you know, there's exchanges there. He was talking about he can't take any more of this. You know, there's several exchanges there. So apparently the House is set to vote on the Epstein Files Transparency Act. I don't know if this is going to be another vote, like what Tim Burchett was saying. But they're saying that there's going to be another vote regarding that. And this lines up with information that I had heard, that there's going to be a lot more information that comes out that backfires on the Democrats, thinking that Trump is involved when Trump was actually the one that was trying to take out Jeffrey Epstein and help the inform the FBI to do so. So yeah, lots of information there this week on the Epstein case. So there you go, Tim. What do you think?
Wow. I know a little more.
I know a little more.
I'm still guessing the rest.
Yes. It's hard not to, but it does seem like the picture is becoming more clear.
This was a option that I've floated.
Yeah. It was one of your
one of the
speculations.
Happy, the happy trails.
So next up, remember I said, if anything, all the attention on the SNAP benefits was a good thing. Remember when we talked about that? So, well, it turns out that they have found massive fraud in the program, Joel.
Go figure.
I know that's not a surprise to you.
Go figure.
But they're now investigating this. And so the Ag Secretary, Brooke Rollins, which is
Boss Lady,
also known as the Boss Lady.
It's a real snap foo.
Yeah. And she's a great boss, by the way, just in case she's listening. She's a great boss.
You know she is.
Yeah, she really is. So she talks about this on Fox News. Listen to what she had to say regarding SNAP benefits.
And 20 other, you know, 20 plus others did not, and we're suing, we're in a litigation right now. But of the 29 that complied, what we have found is staggering. 500,000 people getting benefits two times under the same name. 5,000 dead people. 80% of the able-bodied Americans, meaning they can work, they don't have small children at home, they're not taking care of an elderly parent, they can work and they choose not to work, of course, because they're getting significant benefits from the taxpayer. So this light, Laura, that has now been shined on what is perhaps one of the most corrupt, dysfunctional programs in American history, that we are working now. Very big announcements coming next week on this. We are cracking down. We now have a plan to fix it. And we're really, really excited about doing that for the American people.
Did you know SNAFU was a acronym?
Was it?
In World War II.
I did not.
It is an acronym for Situation Normal All Fouled Up.
Uh-huh.
Huh. What a SNAFU.
This is a snap foo, is what I said.
That describes my almost my day-to-day life.
Yeah.
What was it?
Situation normal.
Situation normal. All fouled up.
All yeah. fouled up.
Mm-hmm. Similar to foo bar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But can you imagine
up,
this?
Like, fouled up beyond all recognition.
Yes. 5,000 dead people, 50,000 getting it, SNAP benefits, 500,000 people receiving it twice using the same name. Like, how is it this easy to fraud the American taxpayers?
That's a lot of Siamese twins.
I'll do you one better. How is this a partisan issue?
Exactly.
If this doesn't get fixed in 10 years, this country is going to be bankrupt.
Yeah, because, I mean, it's already, like,
that's one of
exponentially.
Many issues.
This is one of the biggest. Yeah. One of the biggest issues we're facing right now.
As far as straight-up fraudulent stuff.
Yeah.
How do you want to lump it? Do you want to lump it in with Medicare, Medicaid, and
right.
Social Security?
Yeah.
If you do, then it's the largest problem to ever face this country in history.
Yeah. When it comes to policy or a program that is funded by American taxpayers, like, so it ought not to be. It ought not to be so, Tim.
I'm really telling you.
Ought to be.
Boots on the ground here. There's not an apartment or a house I walk in on a day-to-day basis that is not severely taking advantage mm-hmm. of our food stamp program. Mm. I go through
it's not sustainable.
Hundreds of phones every year. I'm telling you, on every drug dealer in America's phone, mm-hmm. there is a single mom saying, hey, give me a crack rock. Hey, give me a bag of meth. Hey, give me a bag of fentanyl. I'll give you $100 worth of groceries. And that's on every single drug yeah. dealer's phone that I go through.
Drug dealer currency. Yeah.
How do you fix it without being a monster? That's
I've got some ideas.
I do too.
They're not comfortable. Trump tried it in Trump 1.0 with like I can't remember what it called it, brown bag special or brown box special or something like that.
Yeah.
You get the WIC benefits. You get the basic things that are going to keep your kids alive.
Yeah.
You don't get
actual
steaks.
Nutrition.
You don't get shrimp. You get Chex Mix or Chex cereal. You get milk.
Yeah. And that, I mean, cheese. That would be great reform. But I mean, at the very basic level, like dead people getting it, that's an easy fix. That shouldn't be
just
any
cleaning it up's a good start.
Fallout or
people not getting it twice.
Yeah.
Unless they're
people
Siamese
getting it twice
twins.
Under the same name. Like, no.
Even Siamese twins have different names.
Right.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah. So it's obviously. Nobody's checking this stuff.
Maybe if it's Siamese this is quadruplets.
Gonna, this two. Is going to be the one that trips us up.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think so.
I
think
fully
it's a
agree.
Problem.
I was just curious.
It's a behemoth. What? And I mean, it's just growing by leaps and bounds. So next up, an article from the New York Post this week. And here's the headline, okay? The headline is this. Rich sniper tourists allegedly paid $90,000 to shoot civilians, including kids, during human safari trips to Sarajevo. Wild claims allege. That's the headline from the New York Post.
That's a mouthful.
Okay. So a little background before I get into this article. So the sniper tourists typically... When that term is used, refers to a controversial, obviously, and widely criticized tourism gimmick that emerged in post-war Sarajevo. Bosnia, this is in the years following the Bosnian War. Back in 1992, like 1995. So during the siege of Sarajevo, this was 1992 through 1996, the city was surrounded by these Bosnian Serb forces. They were positioned in the hills, the surrounding hills of the city, and they used sniper rifles to target civilians that were going about their daily life in the city, fetching water, whatever, crossing streets, walking to school. You know, just normal life.
Just to instill
fear. Civilians. Yes, just to instill fear. This happened over a period of like four years. The siege took place. An estimated 1,500 to 2,000 civilians were killed by snipers alone. That wasn't including like the bombs and the other means that they would kill people, just the snipers, including hundreds of children. So it just, it turned your ordinary city space into like deadly kill zones for anybody, anybody that was moving about. The most infamous sniper alley was along the Bosny Street, formerly known as Sniper Alley, because it was like a wide street and it had like a direct line of sight to those hills. And so that was the one where they killed the most people. But the sniper tourist phenomenon in the late 1990s, early 2000s, happened as Sarajevo began rebuilding and attracting adventure-seeking tourists. So some local tour operators and informal guides started offering extreme or, like, you know, war tourism experiences. And one of the most notorious elements was they would allow the visitors to rent and fire actual sniper rifles, similar to what they used in the siege, at makeshift ranges and targets, like paper targets, set up in the hills overlooking the city. So like the very same positions that was once occupied by the snipers, you know, you could pay money and you could sit there and shoot the gun at a target from those same positions. And it was, people did it. They would pay money to do it. Whether they were thrill seekers or whatever, this happened from people all over the world, Western Europe. And they would also get like a brief history lesson, you know, the chance to shoot the rifle, maybe sometimes even inanimate objects like watermelons or something. So they marketed these ads to these tourists as shooting from a real sniper position, or, you know, experiencing the siege from the other side. And the rationale from that was, you know, it's educational. It's helping tourists understand the geography of the siege and the fear that civilians endured or whatever. And a few argued it even brought revenue, you know, to a very poor area. But as you might imagine, there was a lot of backlash. Like, the siege survivors were outraged because it was, you know, insensitive to them, and essentially, you know, profiting from the trauma that they had experienced by letting these foreigners play act as the snipers who terrorized the city and killed their people, you know. So there was other groups that kind of lobbied against this, you know. They called it sniper tourism or death tourism. It made international media back then. It'd
be like letting people come to Pearl Harbor and fly drone airplanes into the a decommissioned ship in the harbor.
Back in 2005, 2006, the Bosnian authorities began cracking down on this because they had a lot of pressure from the locals, from NGOs and others. They even passed different laws regarding firearms, thinking that was the problem, which it never is. And those tours were effectively banned. So they, you know, said we need to, you know, promote respectful war history tours instead, not this kind of thing. So they would do guided walks and, you know, the War Childhood Museum, the Tunnel of Hope, and some of those other places. But what I want to bring up is this. This is a recent article from the New York Post. So, and I'm going to read this, some of this article. I know the headline was long, but here's what is going on with this. So, allegedly, these sniper tourists, some of them paid upward of $90,000 to shoot people during these human safari trips in the 1990s, with an extra fee added if they wanted to kill children.
Oh my goodness.
And how this came about is there's an investigation that's going on with this Italian prosecutor, and this came up in this case. There's an Italian writer that alleged he had uncovered evidence that wealthy gun enthusiasts and others dubbed sniper tourists would pay these Bosnian Serb forces for the chance to gun down these residents. More than 10,000 were killed by snipers and shelling bombs in those years during the Balkan Wars. And they show a picture of this actually happening back then, where people were being shot at, just civilians in the street. And here's what he mentions, this Italian writer. He said there were Germans, French, English, people from all Western countries who paid large sums of money to be taken there to shoot civilians. His name is Enzio Gavanzini. I'm not sure exactly how you say that, but close enough.
You are close.
There were no political or religious motivations, is what he claims. They were rich people who went there for fun and personal satisfaction. He said, we're talking about people who, you know, like to go shoot at the range or whatever, or safari in Africa, and they wanted to experience this kind of thing, which is just sick if that's the case and if this is true. But it does seem like new information is emerging about this. And he claims that there one of the key sources was a former Bosnian intelligence officer who's bringing this to light regarding this sniper tourism. So I don't know. I don't know what becomes of that, whether it is actually proven that this happened or not. But wow, just shocking. That if that's true and it was taking place, that people would do such a thing.
I can't believe this was going on in 92.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know. What's next? Oh, yeah. Tucker Carlson.
Back in the news.
Now Tucker Carlson is trashing Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Of all people. Did you see this one?
He's getting harder to defend.
I know. And basically, he is going after Dietrich Bonhoeffer, who's obviously no longer with us, but for trying to kill Hitler. Like, what? Listen to Tucker's monologue, and we're going to talk about this.
Well, Nazis, we really have no choice but to start shooting them to be Dietrich Bonhoeffer and sort of reach the end of reason or even Christianity. Bonhoeffer decided Christianity's not even, he's a Lutheran pastor. Christianity's not enough. We have to kill the guy. I'm not judging Bonhoeffer, who was a great man in some ways, but.
But he was judging Bonhoeffer.
I don't know if you need to throw a butt on he was a great man.
Yeah, exactly.
Or in some ways, I mean.
For those of you who are not familiar, Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a Lutheran pastor that was executed in 1945 for plotting Hitler's assassination. He was a hero. Bonhoeffer was a key figure in the German resistance. Also a Christian. He smuggled Jews to safety, joined the July 1944 bomb plot against Hitler. And, you know, I would recommend if you've ever read any of Eric Metaxas' books, pick it up. It's called Bonhoeffer. And the author is Eric Metaxas. But if you want to read more of the story of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, do that. But, you know, Charlie Kirk had, and this is kind of what sparked, I think, Tucker to talk about this. Charlie Kirk had talked about Bonhoeffer quite a lot. And had praised him as a martyr in an interview that Charlie Kirk was in I think 2023. And he actually made the call. He said, I wish, you know, we had 1,000 Dietrich Bonhoeffers with that kind of commitment and that kind of dedication to the right, you know, doing the right thing and trying to protect people against evil. Which is exactly what he was doing. He understood the evil that Hitler embodied and what he was doing and what he was trying to accomplish. And he saw an opportunity because of his position of being connected to be able to be a part of that plot. And Tucker is going after
him. Is he saying this from like a pacifist?
He prides himself in being somewhat of a pacifist, but he's off way off base.
But he's also saying that Christians should
I'm not agreeing or
resort to that kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm like, I disagree. Like,
he's clearly never read about David slaying the giant.
Well, and that's the thing that I don't understand of why he's, I just don't understand. It doesn't make sense.
What
to
did
me.
They say whenever David strolled to the town that I can't remember.
Saul had killed his thousands,
but David is 10,000.
Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Like I just saw this interview, and I mean, of the things to talk about to downplay what Dietrich Bonhoeffer did to try to protect innocent life.
Yeah, I think we're called to stand up against tyranny to an extent, you know.
Well, and honestly, how dare he?
I don't know. Thinking about the New Testament church, I guess there's probably some grounds that, you know, he stands on there, but I don't think. And it's just a terrible look. Like Bonhoeffer was a hero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, and the righteous taking of a life.
I feel like
something
absolutely.
To be valued.
And it is there is a difference there. It's just like people who say, well, you know, if you're pro-life, then you can't be pro-death penalty or whatever. And it's like that's totally different. You've got innocent life that you're protecting versus people who have made the choice to be evil. You know, there's a big difference there.
Apples and oranges.
And, you know, there may be an argument for somebody to say, well, who's he to decide what is evil and what is not, right?
Hitler was an easy one, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there are people through history and some even now that could make that determination and make it correctly. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to be some super spiritual person necessarily to be able to sense true evil and to know what it is and define it.
I feel like to stop a genocide, that's pretty cut and dry.
That's a righteous cause.
That's a cut and dry thing.
Yeah.
I'm not, but yeah, I think you're taking, like, he's taking a nice sentiment way too far.
Mm-hmm. I think it goes back to like what we talked about last week, just being obsessed with it all. But anyway, we'll leave that there. I'm getting weary of it.
Did you see, in a similar vein, did you see the what Kanye West said?
No.
All of this has just been an act to get out of his contract.
Oh, my goodness. Of course.
And it worked.
It worked
too well.
With him, I wouldn't say that that's beyond the realm of possibility.
That when I heard that, I was like, maybe took it a little far, buddy.
That was probably
that's permanent damage.
The person he paid to fix his image was like, here, buddy.
This is the only plea. Here's how we can get out of this. Chance. And I don't think it's going to work.
Image consultant.
Throw this noodle.
Yeah. All right. Real quick. Did you guys see the...
Could you imagine getting hired to be Kanye West's image consultant?
Oh, my goodness. And would he listen?
No, he wouldn't.
That's charging...
I mean, if he's going to pay you, whatever.
That's charging Hades with a water pistol right there.
Just don't use my name. You can pay me the money and I can tell you what to do. Just don't tell people who I am.
Yeah.
You're DNA. Not going to become the, you're not going to become like Kardashian. DNA. You're not going to become a household name over this one, like mm-mm. The Kardashian lawyer.
No. What's that called when you don't discuss it?
It's a
NDA.
NDA. Non-disclosure agreement.
DNR is very
different. I said DNR. I said DNA.
FFA.
As it turns out, it's
but
FAA.
I do have a feeling that there is a DNR
AT&T.
On Kanye's career.
Yes.
He needs much more R than he's currently getting.
There's no resuscitation to be had.
Who are we to talk about Kanye? He's like the richest performer.
Who got all of his accounts seized?
I think he's probably still at the top of the list.
With no access to any of it, according to him.
It's just an act, Tim.
He couldn't even buy
just
a cheeseburger.
Contract.
He was selling bootleg albums of his own CDs on the street corner to be able to go to McDonald's the other day.
$400 million.
That's a lot.
It's his fortune.
Dre's way richer than that.
Who?
Dr. Dre.
No. I'll find out.
$2 billion. $4 billion.
Well, I think, what's the one that's in prison now?
Biggie? No. I know who you're talking about.
He was worth billions, wasn't he?
I think,
Puffy?
Puffy.
P. Diddy? These names.
I believe that Dr. Dre is the...
How much was P. Diddy worth?
Wealthiest performing artist.
Joel?
I'll find out. This says that Dre is worth $800 million. Kanye West, anywhere from $400 million to $1.8 billion. I think when you factor in his clothesline, he's...
Yeah, but I thought Dr. Dre sold Beats by Dre for like $8 billion to Apple.
Yeah, but
or
that,
some ridiculous...
That doesn't mean that all...
Who was I looking up?
...added to his...
Beyonce's a billionaire. I believe.
Who was I looking up?
Puff.
P. Diddy.
P. Diddy. How much is he worth? I heard the other day he was cleaning the bathrooms in the...
300 milli.
In the clink. Okay, so he's not up there with Kanye.
Oh, before all this happened, 700 milli.
Okay. So he spent a couple dollars on...
legal fees and reduction.
Mm-hmm.
He got... real fluid, real quick.
Mm-hmm. That tax burden gets pretty heavy, I would think. Now, I wanted to mention the Mexican uprising. Have you guys seen this? The Mexican government under attack from the citizens?
This is AI.
This is not AI.
Oh.
I don't think.
Okay. He sold Beats for $3 billion and the tax burden wiped him out. So by the time they renegotiated and he paid his taxes, he didn't make the billion mark.
Oh my!
But
goodness.
It was $3 billion to him.
Yeah, that's what happens. The old taxes get you every time. So yeah, what's going on in Mexico? Like, so yesterday, this would have been Saturday. Gen Z-led protests in Mexico City escalated into a lot of clashes with police outside the National Palace, driven by people really angry with the cartel violence, corruption, the recent murder of a local mayor. Some of the barriers were breached, but it looks like that the building was not being fully overrun. But watch this video. It's wild. Dude right there just had a hammer.
That looks like a Baltimore mostly peaceful protest to me. Right. I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what right. You're seeing.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Like, is this just Portland on
that's,
any given
turns out
Saturday
it was,
night?
This was all FBI agents just practicing for the next time.
This is training, an actual city of training. This is Baltimore and Portland actual protests with less fire.
Right.
Way less fire.
Oh, man.
There is smoke.
So true.
You know what they say.
But yeah, like they were dismantling like the barriers, the metal fences, trying to get in. The police were deploying tear gas. You know, I think there was quite a few injuries, and so the president is Claudia Sheinbaum. Sheinbaum.
So
here's another video.
This is, I mean, so this is.
Look at this. You can see all the security with their
shields out there. Is this a rising up against the cartels?
Yes, it is. Wow. And somebody I read somewhere, I don't know if this is true or not, but they said that a lot of the people are upset because it's like the first president that's not Roman Catholic in Mexico.
She's the first lady president of Mexico. She's the first Jewish president in Mexico.
Do you...
Huh?
This, I'm saying this in all, with all respect and all seriousness. I wonder how many of the people who are doing this right now would have not stayed around to do this had the borders been wide open.
Mm-hmm. It's very true. That's a good point. Yeah.
It is. This is how you take your country back.
How many of those people got shipped back with ICE? You know? You don't know.
You don't know. But, I mean, this is how you would take your country back. And if you have a country that you have to flee, I mean, if we were put
if
in...
it's that bad, yeah.
Yeah. It'd definitely be... food for thought. I would hope that I would stand and
yeah,
and fight for it.
I heard an interesting argument the other day. So Biden's policy on the border was on the what's it called when you come here? Asylum. Biden's uh-huh. asylum border policy was. They changed the definition to where if it's like, I can't remember the exact terminology, but if it's uncomfortable to go back.
Financial asylum.
Yes. You can come here. But this is the only country on the planet where we will get, you can come and get asylum and people also leave.
Vacation.
Vacation back to where they came from.
Mm-hmm. And take the revenue that they make here back there.
Yeah.
And then get tons of free stuff while they're at it. And not pay taxes.
All the while we're being chastised by the Catholic Church.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. Speaking of Portland, did you see the recent protest in Portland?
Tim? What is going on? Huh?
Is this Richard Simmons?
This is what you would call an 80s themed dance party protest in Portland.
Huh. Creative.
I do love an 80s themed dance
Somebody
party.
Said, you know, dressing up like for an 80 themed party just on Halloween seems...
with the leg warmers and all.
Like not enough.
Yeah, watch this. This is great.
How many minds were changed?
Maybe they lost a few pounds, though.
Hey, more power to them.
How many minds were unearthed?
You...
This looks terrible. There's barbed wire on the fences.
You keep keeping Portland weird. They didn't start anything on fire. That's what's exciting.
Yeah. I'm all about this kind of protest.
Although, if that big gal in the spandex keeps on moving, she might start one.
Uh-oh, there's the furry.
Oh. Just keeping Portland weird.
What does that sign say? Stop ICE. Yeah.
Cruelty.
Anti-ICE protest. This is what is cruel, is watching this.
Cruel and unusual.
Yeah, I think Richard Simmons would be proud. Is he still around?
I think he died of AIDS.
I'll find out the accurate.
I always get him and Bob Ross.
Man, I've been on a tear of bad information tonight.
You have. I always get him and Bob Ross mixed up.
He's dead.
Yeah. I thought
he was dead.
He died last July.
Oh.
I thought
it wasn't AIDS.
Well, I'll find out how he died.
I don't think so.
That was strictly based off watching one of his.
Nobody dies of AIDS anymore.
Natural causes.
Technically,
Magic Johnson's had AIDS for my whole life.
No, God healed him.
Really?
He's the only person in history, but God healed him.
Okay.
I'll Google it.
I've been hearing.
That's what they say.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Well, did you know?
He's got a praying grandma.
Did you know Dr. Fauci?
So does he still take his medicine? Because if he does, he...
They were saying that Dr. Fauci was prescribed a medicine that he said was safe and effective. AZT, I believe it was called.
For AIDS?
For AIDS, that killed more people than
for HIV,
AIDS did,
I guess.
Or for HIV. And that was his first thing when he came on the scene, was killing people with safe and effective medicine that had been scrapped because it was not effective and was killing people. And they said virtually no one in the U.S. after they quit prescribing that died of AIDS.
Okay, so Magic Johnson announced in November 91 that he was HIV positive and would retire from basketball. He has lived a long and healthy life since then, thanks to a strict regimen of antiretroviral medications.
Mm-hmm.
These powerful drugs, specifically protease inhibitors, introduced in the mid-1990s, have made his HIV viral load undetectable in his blood tests. Irvin Magic Johnson has not been medically cured of HIV or AIDS, but he and his wife, Cookie Johnson, have attributed his long-term health and undetectable viral load to their faith in God.
Wow. I never knew that.
Yeah.
See, even I learned things on the Man Cave Caucus podcast.
Well, yeah.
And we've here's what Richard Simmons would be saying.
Bring out your dead! Ninepence.
I'm not dead.
What? Nothing. Here's your ninepence.
I'm not dead.
Yeah. He says he's not dead.
Yes, he is. I'm not.
He isn't?
Well, he will be soon. He's very ill. I'm getting better.
No, you're not. You'll be stone dead in a moment. Oh, I can't take him like that. It's against regulations.
I don't want to go on the cart.
Oh, don't be such a baby. I can't take him.
I feel fine.
Well, do us a favour.
I can't.
Well, can you hang around a couple of minutes? He won't be long.
No, I've got to go to Robinson's. They've lost 9 today.
Well, when's your next run? Thursday.
I think I'll go for a walk.
You're not fooling anyone, you know. Look, isn't there something you can do?
Have you seen this, Joel?
Happy. I feel happy.
Ah, oh, thanks very much.
Oh, man.
So good.
Well, that's a wrap, boys. Anything else?
I hope we made the people laugh.
I'm going to sleep like a baby tonight.
I bet. After that bender of a trip you've been on.
Phew.
I mean, goodness. Don't forget, wherever you get your podcasts, you can go over there, take about, I don't know, 30 seconds, leave us a 5-star review. Just a glowing 5-star review. Don't pay any attention to all of Tim's facts that are not facts.
Joel cleaned up 95% of them tonight.
Give
us
a 5-star review for Joel's sake. Okay. Can you do that? That'd be great.
Give us shoot us a song recommendation for coming back from the break.
Yeah. There you go.
We just might play it.
We might. Or we might just
avoid it.
Yeah.
Like the plague.
That's right. We have a tendency to do that.
With proof, with receipt of a 5-star review, maybe right. We'll squeeze it in somewhere.
Mail it to us. You have to mail your complaint. It's like rebates.
No, if they prove that they gave us the 5-star review.
Yeah. And we don't have to prove that we received it, so. All right.
Be God like waiting everybody. For Menards rebates.
Yes. Oh, man. Well,
Job would have fired off a complaint letter waiting for Menards rebates.
Yes. How long does it take, by the way?
There's no prescribed time. I've gotten them back in like 7 days, and then it's gone 3 months before.
Wow.
But the date on the bottom, they've never not honored one.
Yeah.
So I've sent them in that were like a year old.
I heard there was a big scam of like the U.S. mail carriers stealing the envelopes.
I bet. What? You just need one bad apple. In the sorting room?
Yeah.
Tip. Free house.
Yeah.
I know my brother's company did 103,000 in Menards receipts since we started, or 103,000 in rebates since we started.
And got all of them. Wow.
Do you guys think that we're being throttled?
On the podcast?
Yeah.
I do.
On the shares?
Yeah. Always.
I do too. And I thought Facebook was out of that game.
They're never out of the game. They don't even control it anymore. AI does, right?
Yeah.
Share the podcast.
Yeah. Like and share. Really helps us out. Tell your friends.
I've been thinking about picking up a harmonica.
In addition to the, what do you call this?
The lute.
No.
The Japanese lute.
Is that what it is?
It's a shamisen.
Shamisen.